Live and direct from London, South London to be exact. It's your boy Joel for an episode of the Global Citizen Podcast. I'm with, first time, long time, my boy Jeremy. We initially had a podcast which eventually will be aired. Don't worry about it. When you guys hear this, it'll all be a story like the Avengers.
TVC.
Yeah. Jeremy, what's up, man?
I'm good.
Yo, thank you again, man. I can't thank you enough. This has been a really, really, really great 3-day stopover in London. I wish I could stay longer.
Thanks for coming. I'm really, you know, when you were sort of hypothesizing as between here and Barcelona, I was like, this guy ain't coming. And then when you actually called, I was like, oh.
Barcelona or London? But no, I'm glad I made this trip. But yeah, man, it's also good. I mean, we keep in touch, but it's definitely better when you're in the flesh.
Yeah.
Versus voice notes.
I often hear that.
Yeah.
From people.
Yeah. It's all good. You suck at texting. It's all good, motherfucker. I know you there. I know you care.
I am. You can see the blue ticks. Yeah. I'm processing.
He's like, all right, gotta go.
How are you doing, man? How are you finding London? Let's start there.
I'm enjoying it, man. For what you've shown me and the little things I've done on my own, I definitely could see myself, you know, I wouldn't mind living here.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's going to happen in the future, but if it ever happened, I'd be like, this is cool. Yeah. It's a pretty legit great city. There's a lot of, again, in the 3 days, I think it's great, and there's a lot to do. A lot to see. I think the music scene here is pretty fucking dope, man. I didn't know. I've heard about it, I guess, through you. And also, in general, people say, like, the music scene in London's pretty good. I agree.
I mean, it's very, you know, it's kind of crazy to me that you didn't know that. Because in my head, it's one of the best in the world. Like, you've got several hotspots that, you know, have been sort of bubbling consistently for the last 10 years. You've got Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing mainly the electronic thing.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, obviously, there's a scene out of LA. America would just call the whole, which is really unfair. But you've got consistently good stuff coming out of the East Coast and the West Coast, the beat scene in LA. And
right.
The underground hip-hop coming out of New York, especially the young guys, people like Wiki and people like that.
Yeah.
But even all those guys, their producers are British producers.
Yeah,
it's, you know, there's a lot of guys behind the boards for some of the most, like, important independent labels.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, there's definitely the option on any given night of the week to go out and see a dope band for £5.
Yeah. You
know, which is crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean,
the show we went to was free.
Yeah. That was a great show. We went to a jazz show at this bar in Hackney. What was the name of the bar again?
It's called the Haggerston.
The Haggerston.
Yeah, Hackney's where Skepta's from. Skepta's, like, getting quite big in the US right now.
Okay. Don't know who that is.
Don't know if your listeners would be
Google
Skepta.
Yeah.
He's actually a really funny character because he sort of did grime when it started was terrifying to people. Like, people didn't want to hear that in the club. They didn't want to see the sort of people that listened to it. The idea of this sort of street-looking black guy was not in fashion, it wasn't on the front of Vogue.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Like, this guy Skepta, he's got a cover shoot with Naomi Campbell
for Vogue. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there was a period of time where they were just sort of plugging away, trying to make it a lot of, you know, the mixtape era sort of thing. But with the grime guys, they did a lot with DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
All these sort of DVDs that show people clashing and emceeing battles and stuff like that. And then they sort of just sort of tipped over. But before it tipped over, this guy Skepta did a video once where it was clearly like just to drive some sort of hits to the video.
Mm-hmm.
He actually filmed a video with an actual porn star.
Oh, really?
Having sex in the video.
Oh, so like, okay.
Fully having sex in the back of the video.
So he recorded his his video on a porn set.
Essentially.
Wow.
Or his video was a porn set.
Yeah.
And that was how desperate he was to sort of get likes. And people don't talk about it anymore. They all just want to say, you know, it was an astronomical role. It wasn't. It was, you know, 15 years maybe in the making.
Yeah, grinding hard.
Really hard. Yeah. And then somehow finding himself. When he blew up off a track that, you know, prior to that, a lot of it had been posturing and cars and all of this stuff. And then he came out with this track called That's Not Me. And the track was just, like, talking about how he used to have all this Prada, Gucci, whatever, whatever. But he's throwing it all in the bin. He just rocks the black trackie now. Like, yeah. He keeps it that real. Yeah. And all of a sudden, people related to it, and they were down. And
trackie, tracksuit?
Yeah, tracksuit, yeah.
Am I not? I'm
really what would you guys call it? Sweat?
He's wearing a tracksuit. Or if he's wearing sweats, he's rocking sweats.
What's the difference between sweats and the tracksuit?
I guess the tracksuit for me is like the material.
Okay.
Yeah. Understood. But now though, tracksuits have, I mean, maybe they've always been like that, but now people are more likely to buy like a sweat tracksuit. Like I have a bunch of now, at least a number of Adidas sweatpants, but like the nice three stripe ones.
Yeah.
Those are actually fucking dope. Yeah, they're dope. So when wintertime comes, I'm gonna be out there in these Adidas sweatpants.
Oh, for real? You just rock the sweatpants, nothing underneath?
Oh no. I mean fucking shorts. I mean underwear, but I really rock them out.
I'd wear them under trousers.
Okay.
That's where I go with it. That's my winter style. Yeah. Speaking of which, what has been your take? Do you feel like you've gotten an understanding of like London fashion? Like, have you seen noticed things that people are wearing? And
I mean,
is it any different?
It's different, but like same idea, but different. But people are pretty well dressed here. I acknowledge that quickly. Not too much bright colors, though.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. That's very true. And it's interesting.
I would stand out here, because sometimes I'd be wearing some of these loud-ass shirts.
Well, white areas versus black areas, you notice the difference? Like,
not so much.
You will, though. I've noticed it in the past.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you'll go to South Ken, and it's muted beiges and, you know, pastels and shit.
Uh-huh.
And then you go to South London and it's, you know, hot orange, electric blue, green. Like, just colours, you know.
Yeah.
I don't need to go through
But still, though, those types of colours, like an electric blue, it's like, I feel like those cats that sound stylish would wear that electric blue at night. They wouldn't wear it during the day.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, like, yeah.
Either way, man, I think I like the fashion here. It's, you know, and
you picked up on any specific little things, like the trouser length thing. Is that what's going on in the States right now?
Trouser length, or just the way people wear clothes that fit here.
Okay.
They aren't fitted, they're fit. They fit.
Yeah.
You can tell, like, I don't know. They pay attention to that. And also, it's just like, there's this, like, punk chic thing. If that makes sense.
Especially
for the girls. I feel like there's a punk chic, you know? You'll see a girl with, like, mad ear piercings, black lipstick, but there's something chic about it. It's not just like that.
Yeah, like she's wearing a Dior leather jacket or something crazy.
It might be a Dior leather jacket, shit. But
That's kind of what the city was. I think that's what, for this one strand of women's fashion, I think that's what it's known for. Like, they used to say that Kate Moss was the sort of person, she's like probably the most famous British supermodel, and she would be known for like wearing like a really high end thing with like a Topman shirt, and that's how, or Topshop rather, Topshop shirt or something.
Yeah.
And that's how she ended up being like the bastion of that brand. I think that's how it went to New York and had more cachet. Because here it was a budget brand.
Yeah.
And it kind of revamped itself.
They're like, what? They'll pay how much? Yeah, but
in fact, the guy who owns Topman is Philip Green, and his daughter is that woman who married Jeremy.
Who's Philip Green?
He's Sir Philip Green. He's the owner of this huge, huge conglomerate that has a bunch of different retail outlets, fashion outlets. And his daughter is the woman who married Jeremy Meeks, a.k.a. Hot Convict. Do you remember that dude?
I do.
Have you heard how his story has developed?
No, I haven't heard his story.
He became a model.
Yeah.
And he met this chick. This girl's like multi-millionaire. Like, her father, you know, is one of the richest men in England, I think. And he's mates with all the big stars and stuff. And so she meets him, and they sort of hook up, and then she gets pregnant by him.
Wow.
Yeah. And now they've got a kid together, and he left his wife. It's over. cold-blooded.
He's like, I love her.
Yeah, he just moved on.
That is pretty cool, but that means you've been thinking about it. Yeah, I know. Same thing happened with Swizz Beatz and Alicia Keys.
What? They broke up?
No, but he was married with kids, and Alicia was like, I keep on falling. He was like,
I think I'm jealous.
Oh my god.
Inspired by true events.
Yeah, but now they have a kid who's like fucking playing the xylophone, like he's about to drop a beat. I'm like, you made that, guys.
Coming out with a new beat tape.
I know.
You heard he went to Harvard?
Yeah, he got like a degree, and it wasn't like some honorary bullshit. Mm. Like they had a feature of him with like a binder of his notes. Like he had some shit laminated. Like he was like, no, I'm at Harvard. Like
I got to do it.
I got to do it. If you go back at that age, you're not going there to fuck around.
No, not at all. Yeah, he's an interesting guy.
Yeah, all the Harvard kids who could hear this, who went there for our undergrad and fucked around, probably just not like, I mean, I got out of there, but geez.
You think, like...
I mean, you just got the name, and no one's going to ask you your GPA. Like, I went to Harvard. Oh, okay, well.
That's it, right?
You go, kind sir or madam.
That is it, you know. Yeah. Here's the door. Please step inside. And own the building immediately.
Yeah, you go. You're the geek.
I think the people who really regret it are the people that wanted to go to... she thought about going to Harvard, but then couldn't be asked to try.
Yeah.
That's where you regret it. Like, if you pass, if you got through, you've got your ticket, man. You can, like, go... I know a guy who's working in permaculture right now on a commune. But he could tomorrow turn around and go to like an agribusiness company and they'd be like, right, so
Harvard and you had experience.
Yeah.
Same with all the Ivies, Harvard, Columbia.
Yeah, any Ivy, but some stand out more, right? Like we've got what we call the red bricks here, which is a similar sort of system. Mm. But you know, some are more equal than others.
Yeah,
so I think in terms Oxford and Cambridge.
Right. Oxford and Cambridge, you drop it, you're just like, oh, I feel like it's Harvard, Columbia,
Yale,
I think.
Princeton.
I mean, you're naming all of them. Princeton, Penn, Dartmouth, Brown.
But some have more of a liberal arts feel to them, right? Like,
I don't know. I didn't go to an Ivy League, so I can't tell you.
From what I hear, like from TV and movies, you'll have like someone said they went to Stanford or Brown because it's on the West Coast. And they'll be like, oh, you probably did social sciences or something. Yeah. Whereas if you went to...
Well, my girl's a powerhouse. She went to Columbia and now goes to Penn. So it's just like,
boom, boom.
There's two double barrel shotguns.
Shout out powerful black women.
Yeah, shout them out.
Tell me how you feel. Now you're back in the States.
Yeah.
I'd like to revisit it. So you're back in the States. You've been living in Kenya. How long were you there for?
Like a year and 10 months.
Okay.
Almost
so
2 years.
Basically 2 years.
Yes, basically 2 years.
And... You know, so you had enough time to put down roots, might be a bit of a strong word, but you know, you had your places you like to go, you had the people that you saw, you know, you knew people in the area, you were learning the language.
Right.
So we can say, but you sort of, embedded might be the wrong word, but you were pretty much...
There.
You were living that life.
Yeah, I was
and
trying
And you were
to,
enjoying it
yeah,
as well, a
I
lot.
Was. I was.
And you had a bit of anticipation about...
Coming back. Yeah, I mean, I had my reservations.
We don't have to go into everything, but, you know, just the general idea of, I guess, on the most basic level, just being in a place where... You said something really interesting when we were there, actually. We were sitting in a bar one day, and you were like, shit, here, I feel like I think I get white privilege.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm experiencing it.
Yep, basically. Great point.
Yeah. And then to have that snatched from you, you know, is it better to have loved than lost? Are the benefits of being in a place where, you know, I don't know if you could call it completely sane, but somewhere more like settled and with better infrastructure and stable would be the word I use.
Yeah, somewhere.
For
now.
For the most part, you don't have people running through the streets or cutting off people's fingers when they vote and stuff, do you?
No, hell no, you don't have that.
You know, there's definitely levels to this game, as they say.
Of course.
So how does it feel to be back? Do you feel like the fears and anticipations you had were real and actually happened?
Yeah.
Also, do you feel like... you've acclimatized to it, like you're happy with your current situation, or are you like, actually, I'm going back to Africa, F this?
No, I mean, I'm back. I'm glad I'm back. I'm around family, I'm around friends, closer, you know, with my girlfriend, you know, proximity. That's, you know, why I came back. And I'm at a point now where I'm, like, used to being back. Like, I wouldn't... Now someone's like, you can go back to Kenya, I'd be like, I don't know, not now.
Sure.
It was a great experience. But when I initially got back, it kind of hit slowly, real slowly. Because at first it's like, you're there, everything happened so fast. I got back, Christmas happened, you're with your family and shit and all that stuff. New Year's, and then boom, you move to DC and go to work on Monday or whatever. So you just kind of, it's kind of exciting a little bit. You're adjusting to your new life, new apartment, new situation. But then slowly it creeps in. Like, you know, you look around, it's like, I haven't seen a black person in like 6 hours.
Oh, so real.
And then also that, but also the price. Shit is expensive in DC. Things are in Kenya, if you make a decent westernized salary, you could do pretty well in a place like Kenya. And not that it was dirt cheap, but you know, it was way
very affordable if you're making decent cash.
Yes, yeah. Agreed. So there's that. But you know, I'm cool. Like, I'm not in a bad place. One thing that I don't like is that I feel like I've gotten into a routine again, and which is a good thing, but also a bad thing. It's like, I know exactly what I'm gonna be doing tomorrow. In fact, when I was in Kenya, anything could pop up any day. I mean, or you can get more or less into a routine, but you can go and do something different easily.
Yeah.
Like, completely different. Like, you could be working all weekend on the weekend. You can go on a really nice hike. Or you can take a cheap plane and go to the beach by the, you know, the Indian Ocean and see fucking dolphins and then come back and go to work on Monday. Now it's just like, doop, 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 doop.
Do you not think that's just laziness, though? Because I think that when you're in Kenya, you're going to be like, I'm in Kenya, I've got to really milk this. But all of the things you described, at least in Europe, are possible. For example, I could decide on a Friday, I want to go somewhere and just Google cheap flights and find somewhere that goes to a beach. And given that it's been a heat wave, you know, I could do it for the same amount. Because once you're there, you're still paying for your accommodation, all of that stuff's still fairly similar, you know, because it's tourist prices.
Right.
So, I mean, I feel like all of those things are still totally accessible.
Yeah.
And probably a lot more things, but I'm just too lazy to do it. I'm too lazy to even pursue my most basic, almost needs. Right. You know, like, I love going to see music, but I still will be like, oh, I'm not sure I can be bothered to go to that free show.
Get a free show.
Yeah.
There's laziness, maybe not at that level. This is it. But no, there definitely is laziness involved. Just getting back from work and just, instead of being productive, it's just like, let me just lay here or just do something. Let me watch basketball again, or let me watch an episode of Power. Yeah. Shout out, Stars. Get the strap. But like, I realized the goals I made for myself, New Year's, we're already more than halfway through the year, and it's like, I got a few done, but I haven't like made the dent that I need to make.
Sure. So that's something that I feel is, I'm noticing a lot in myself this year, and it's tied into the other thing I was going to ask about, sort of like the difference between the cultures and stuff. Like, everything is done faster in Kenya in terms of, you leave school, you go to university, you do your master's, you don't ever take a year out to travel or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
You go into your job. A lot of people are, you know, it's not abnormal to be married by 25, 26.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is in the States. I'm sure in some certain towns that is the case, but for the majority in England, I think that's still it's considered a normal age to get married, 26. But also like maybe slightly younger.
Yeah.
You know, like 27 would be like a standard age that loads of people get married, but 24, 25 is not quite the same thing. And people in Kenya at 27 are like, I'm too old, I better get married straight away.
I'm old.
And the perspective that people have, the way they hold themselves, the way they behave, all of these things are almost Victorian in their stateness. I mean, that's not so much the case with our generation, but just the one before us, our parents' generation, say, are so much more proper and reserved.
Yeah.
And it influences you. It influenced me, seeing people and the way relationships are conducted and stuff. And now I compare it to other things. It's not that that's the way I would conduct my relationships, but I'm aware that this is some sort of form of maybe proper relationship.
Right.
And time, as it's like sort of gone on and on, there's this thing of, you know, relative time. Obviously, the older you get, the longer you live, the shorter a period of set period of time is. So a day when you're one is going to be longer than a day when you're 32, 35, yeah, or whatever it is. And now weeks just seem to fly by.
Time is nothing.
And, you know, you get to, like you say, you get to halfway through the year and you're like, what have I done? Like, I think I told you the other day, I feel like I'm constantly either getting ready to go somewhere or rushing to be somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm either ready and there's the anticipation of having to leave, or right, I'm late and I'm running for it.
Right.
There's never, because I always feel like I have to be doing stuff. You can't just take a day off and just be like,
right,
oh, I'm just going to do absolutely nothing today. Like, you can't be doing that.
So it sounds like you're working a lot and don't have the time to, like, collect your thoughts. Or put the, what's in the thoughts to, like...
Yeah, I guess it's the working a lot thing, but it's also the feeling of time yeah, ticking onward slowly, and you being like, okay, I'm all right for now, but if I don't, you know, step it up a notch, so to speak, I won't be whatever that thing is that I think I want to be,
yeah,
you know, or should be.
No, it's true. Like, if you want something and you're not putting the effort to do it, it's not going to happen. You can want it all you want, but if you kind of just sit around for whatever reason and don't do it, it's not gonna happen. And I'm realizing that too, honestly.
Don't you wish life was more like Entourage, like Vince? You just like goes places, and someone's like, "Hey, do you want a part of my movie for 40 million?" And all of your guys can work on
That's what it needs to be. That's what I'm waiting for, actually. So I'm working hard on finding that.
You gotta have goals. Yeah. You gotta have goals. Don't you know about Tiffany Haddish? Just dream.
Yo, I saw her live.
How was it?
So she wasn't performing. It was the Eritrean Festival.
Oh, right.
And it was like 4 days. And I was there with my girl and her family and with a bunch of other mad Eritreans. And Tiffany Haddish, she came through.
She was just at the function.
She showed up.
Was it like a personal appearance, or was she just...
She went on stage and whatever, like, you know.
Did she ready?
Did she, you know, she came back, she danced, she did, you know, the shoulder dance that they do. It was dope. They love her, man. They love her. Like, it's like, yo, you're big. We love you. She had quote unquote security. I call it campus safety came. But she needs to get better security.
The mall cops.
Yeah, there were mall cops, basically.
But what's the deal with, like, you know, obviously, I wasn't at this festival, but I'd imagine, like, something that was the whole festival sort of pays some sort of homage to tradition as well.
Yeah.
Her persona, whilst hilarious, is also, I'm sure, extremely contradictory to a lot of the more social mores of Ethiopian society. Like,
Eritrean. But yeah,
they didn't give a fuck. They was like, well, she made it, so she can make it by grapefruiting a banana on
right. Yeah. Well, they know about that. It's there. And I think it is definitely risque. Everyone's kind of like, I was like, kind of, you know, gritting your teeth, like, I hope she don't say something wild. But she did. I don't want to say she did a good job, but she's really into her culture, and I think it's new for her.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think she hadn't been to Eritrea before she went. Her dad was Eritrean, but I don't know about their history too much.
It seems she was in foster homes a lot of the time.
Yeah, she was. But she did, when she went there, she kicked it with the president. And the country's kind of split down the middle on how they view the president, you know. So those who are not pro-president Isaias Afwerki, they're like, you know, she needs to watch what she's saying. And those who are pro, you know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a political angle to
that. So for me, I don't think she possibly knows any better. I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, maybe someone's not telling her, hey, this is a situation. Or she does, and is, I don't know. I can't comment.
I think she's probably just tripping, because if you think about it, like, in real terms, most people, for the majority, would be quite proud to be invited to meet the president of their country. That's a stepping stone for a girl that grew up in, what was it, Compton or something?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but somewhere.
It's Compton. Yeah.
Imagine, you know, and your dad's telling you you're this and you're that, or what little memories you have of him, and then all of a sudden you are invited to visit. Like, her whole narrative is this, you know, I made it thing, and people really want to get behind that. Yeah. You know, it's not unlike Entourage, although she really is quite open about how hard she worked.
That's her whole thing, is how hard she works, sleeping in cars.
Yeah.
But she's on the Tracy Morgan show, right?
Yeah, is it The Last Real OG?
Yeah. Is she on it?
She is. She plays his, I want to say ex-wife, but I'm not sure if she was married to him or not. Mm-hmm. But she's basically the mother of his children. Like, they were together proper.
Is she good? How is she on the show?
She's fine in it, but it's not a role that particularly demands anything particularly challenging. Mm-hmm. Like, the character that she plays is somebody who's pissed off because the man that she loved went against her wishes multiple times, ended up getting herself locked up. Yeah, and now he's back wanting, trying to make amends, and she's just like, it's pretty standard fare.
Yeah, it's not.
It's a good, it's an alright show. Yeah. Like, her character isn't that well sort of filled out, I guess, but she's alright in it, and she's kind of like, she's a very likeable character, and she's sort of meant to be a bit on the wild side anyway, so it's not too far from like the persona she normally
I kind of actually want to see her in that Kevin Hart movie.
I'd like to see her do like a movie with someone like who's that guy that did A Hunger and 12 Years a Slave?
The director?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a British dude.
Yeya.
Fuck, I don't know.
Steve McQueen. That's why I always forget, because it's like, really? Yeah, Steve McQueen. I'd like to see her do something really, on that sort of,
like, deep. She's probably gonna have to.
Yeah, not like, I don't want to see her get raped or anything, but no, I just want to see, like,
she taps in and has
I think she could probably do it. Probably. She's very, like, I don't know, a lot of emotion on her face. I mean, it'd be hard to rein it in, but
yeah, that's the thing. I'm not friendly with
TV. I mean, she's almost like a Jim Carrey kind of energy,
right? I feel like you have to put yourself out there to do roles like that, where you get into like some dark. You have to get into a place to act that out. I mean, you are an actor, but
yeah. So you're Tiffany Haddish, right? And you're 5 years down the line, so you've done a few movies. You've sort of done your Will Smith 6 Degrees of Separation bit, kiss someone the same sex as you to prove you, a broad character spectrum. And you're in the run up. You're making your Oscar run. What's the movie selection as Tiffany Haddish?
So basically, if I made my money, which I know is important to Tiffany and it should be important to me.
Yeah.
I made my money. It's like, all right, do I want to keep doing like these typical roles for me? What do I want to do? I guess if I'm a true actor, I want to challenge myself. If I'm like, I know I'm good and I'm already got money in the bags, even if I flop on something, it's okay. I challenge myself. But is Tiffany Haddish an actress, or is she a comedian, or is she both?
I think most comedians are actors, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it, I don't think you ever really have the real version of a person on when they're on stage. Mm-hmm. It's a persona that they've developed, like, I mean, some people seem really real. Like, Richard Pryor seems really real, but I bet he was, you're not performing for people when you're not on stage, so you are acting.
Yeah.
It's just a question of, how well can you tap into it? A lot of those guys have moved from comedy into
acting
proper. Bill Murray, Jim Carrey.
Kevin Hart.
What movie did Kevin Hart do?
All of these fucking movies. He played the same guy.
Chris Tucker did Silver Linings Playbook, and he was really good.
I didn't see that. He was also in the movie with Bruce Willis. Call me my man.
Which one?
The one where Bruce Willis, he's kind of like...
Oh, what? That, like, old school movie? Fifth Element. That's a throwback. That's probably over 20 years old, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you remember the depiction of the future in The Fifth Element?
Everything's fucked up in the sky.
There was no logic to what was going on. But I feel like the TV show thing kind of felt like the reality. I don't know. I just remember the cigarettes. Him having cigarettes as really long filters.
I can't even remember. I mean, I feel like I had to see that for a class almost.
That was the end of part one of my two-part epic interview with my boy Jeremy. Stay tuned for episode 2.